Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Ian, let's start with the good. Turns out the FBI's kind of busy right now. And we're not even talking about all the homegrown ISIS cases they're investigating, which number in the high hundreds, perhaps the thousands now. No, in addition to once again combing through emails related to Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin, now they're investigating fundraising and financing of the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate in Florida. This is courtesy of Ed Morrissey, who also quotes liberally from the Hill newspaper. Most politicians make it through an election cycle without being tainted by a straw man donor scheme, but Congressman Patrick Murphy is no ordinary politician. The Florida challenger to Marco Rubio's Senate seat wound up connected to not just one, but two straw man donor schemes in 3 days, albeit apparently unwittingly. The FBI has opened up an investigation into an alleged pipeline of crony cash into Murphy's flailing campaign. Now we quote The Hill. The FBI is investigating an alleged illegal donation scheme involving a wealthy Saudi family that supports Democratic Florida Senate candidate Patrick Murphy. The Hill has found no evidence that Murphy himself was involved in or even aware of the alleged scheme. The Murphy campaign declined to say whether the candidate is aware of the FBI probe. That's interesting. But the campaign said neither Murphy nor his campaign staff is being investigated. The allegation, originally submitted by a Republican super PAC run by a former top aide to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, is that Murphy's high school friend and major political donor, Ibrahim al-Rashid, coordinated a straw donor scheme to boost Murphy. Al-Rashid did not respond to multiple requests for comments, and Murphy's campaign declined to say whether Murphy's attorneys had discussed the FBI investigation with al-Rashid's attorney. And this also follows on the heels of the Free Beacon reporting on this 2 weeks ago. It turns out that that complaint includes references to the fact that this al-Rashid is the son of a Saudi billionaire who has donated somewhere between $1 and $5 million to the Clinton Foundation. And also that a lot of money is being pumped into Murphy's campaign and Charlie Crist's campaign on behalf of al-Rashid through this other scheme. So, Ian, that's a lot of narrative to point out the fact that if we've learned anything from WikiLeaks and stories like this, there's a lot of shady people around, even when the candidate might not be shady as part of the scheme.
It seems more by the day the case with Patrick Murphy. This is not the first time that he's had questionable donations made. He gave a couple years back, gave money back to a Boston law firm that had been reimbursing, the partners had been reimbursing lawyers to donate to Democratic Party candidates, and Murphy was the recipient of some money there. It's all particularly amusing given the Democrats beating the drum for years and years about getting money, getting big money, getting suspicious money out of politics. It seems like obviously at the top of the ticket on the Democratic side, but then down the ticket as well, it turns out Democratic campaigns, even if the candidates aren't aware, are happy to take money that certainly would not look good if the public knew about it.
At least there's not 650,000 emails to go through in this particular case. As far as we know, most of the polls in the last few days suggest that Rubio has a lead. The size of the lead seems to vary from poll to poll. It's anywhere from within the margin of error up to about 10 points. So let's move on to the bad martini now. And in addition to her own campaigning, as well as Tim Kaine, her vice presidential running mate, Hillary Clinton, she's getting small crowds. Tim Kaine is getting crowds that could fill a small elementary school classroom from what we're being told. So they have to bring out the heavy hitters to draw some bigger crowds. And President Obama is one of those figures. I believe this was from Ohio on Tuesday night. And he was talking to men in particular and basically tisk-tisking them for not lining up behind Hillary Clinton.
I want every man out there who's voting to kind of look inside yourself and ask yourself, well, if you're having problems with this stuff, how much of it is, you know, that we're just not used to it? So that, you know, when a guy's ambitious and out in the public arena and working hard, well, that's okay. But when a woman suddenly does it, suddenly you're all like, well, why is she doing that? I'm just being honest. I want you to think about it because she is so much better qualified than the other guy. She has conducted herself so much better in public life than the other guy. That this notion that somehow, oh, you know, this is hard to choose. It shouldn't be.
Ian, he's apparently saying that she's conducted herself honorably. We've got investigation after investigation, lie after lie on these sorts of thing. And the fact that they're dropping this into the conversation now reeks of a pathetic last attempt to play the victim here. I think Sean Davis from The Federalist had it right on Twitter this morning when he said, "Let me see if my grievance math is correct. Hillary was a racist for opposing Obama in 2008, and he was a sexist in 2008 for opposing Hillary."
That's exactly right. We've talked about this throughout the cycle. I mean, very early on, you saw that Hillary was going to try to play this card. After one of her early primary victories, she gave sort of a, you know, woman hear me roar kind of speech, and it didn't really play. And then they basically dropped that line of appeal, and you really haven't heard too much throughout the cycle from the Clinton campaign about, you know, her being a historic figure as the first female president or that sort of thing. However, you do occasionally hear it from surrogates, and this is one of the, you know, I certainly have my fair share of disagreements with the current president, but occasionally he can speak in sort of sober terms. When he's out on the campaign trail, that's it's never been the case. It wasn't the case in 2008, you know, when he was accusing people of clinging to their religion and their hatred for people who aren't like them. And it's not the case now. And it's all this mechanism that has long characterized left-wing politics and is now characterizing right-wing politics as well. Basically anathematizing and questioning the motives, the sort of deep-seated psychological motives of people who disagree with you on policy questions. I disagree with Hillary Clinton because I think she's wrong on just about everything. I didn't feel that way about Sarah Palin, you know, in 2008 at least. You know, can you explain how I'm sexist in one case but not sexist in the other? I mean, you know, you have to run around figuring out puzzles like these if you take the president's line. The simple fact is that the sweeping majority of people, 99 point something, you know, point X percent of people who oppose Hillary Clinton will do so for reasons that have nothing to do with the fact that she doesn't have a Y chromosome.
Two follow-up points here, and we're probably kind of late in the game to be going into the videotape and the audio tape into explaining how Obama's tics work. But when he goes into the stutter like this, you know a massive lie is coming. Every time he does that, a massive lie is coming. Not that he's not lying often the rest of the time, but you know a big, big whopper is coming there. And he's worried about men thinking that an ambitious woman is somehow trouble while ambitious men are to be expected. Ambitious is an interesting word. Corrupt, criminal, potentially. And this leads into bad martini B, because of all the WikiLeaks, one of the more damaging one certainly was released on Tuesday. This is from March 2nd, 2015, and we'll explain in just a moment why that's significant. From John Podesta to Cheryl Mills, on another matter, and not to sound like Lanny, and I assume that's Lanny Davis, but we are going to have to dump all those emails, so better to do so sooner than later. The 2nd of March 2015, from what I understand, Ian, is when the first reports came out that there would be a congressional subpoena for Hillary Clinton's emails, and then on March 4th is when that subpoena was actually issued, and we know now that the bleach bit was used even after that subpoena came. So put this in the context of ambitious, and the only reason people might oppose Hillary Clinton is because she's female.
This goes back to one of these things that has come out throughout all this cycle, or has sort of been a recurring thing about this cycle, which is, oh, you need to, you just need to wait and see the real Hillary Clinton. You know, people don't know who Hillary Clinton is, but wait until she sort of revealed. People know who Hillary Clinton is. She's been in everyone's face for 30 years. The same woman who is up to all the shenanigans and machinations that she is in 2016, was doing the same thing in 1992 during Bill's campaign. And if you go and look back, you know, you have reports from, you have Juanita Broderick saying that she basically silenced her in 1978. There's this notion out there that there's this great hidden gem inside Hillary Clinton that no one has seen. And if they just see it, then everyone will suddenly be converted. That's nonsense. We all know who this woman is. That's why Donald Trump is running a neck and neck race with her.
Amazing. All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And we're kind of going to jump off from the point we just made as to where the public stands when it comes to these two presidential candidates. First of all, you can tell by what the parties are doing in the down ballot races of tying these incredibly unpopular candidates to other members of their own party. Here's what the Republican National Republican Senatorial Committee is doing.
It's time to start asking, why are Democrat Senate candidates still standing with Hillary Clinton? They already know about the smashed private email servers, sketchy meetings, shady political donations, special immunity deals. Now Hillary Clinton is under FBI investigation again. But Democrat Senate candidates are continuing to support Hillary, while her super PAC is spending millions of dollars on their Senate races. If these Democrat Senate candidates are letting her get away with these scandals now, just imagine what they would let Hillary Clinton get away with in the White House. Paid for by NRSC.
Not to be outdone, the Democrats, this is from a specific congressional race in Northern Virginia.
On issues that matter to Northern Virginia, Barbara Comstock and Donald Trump have a lot in common.
Overturn Roe v. Wade. That's a specific
Well, overturn
thing that
or overturn.
I think Roe versus Wade should be overturned.
Trump and Comstock.
I am totally for defunding, but we shouldn't be giving to Planned Parenthood.
While Comstock voted five times to defund Planned Parenthood. Northern Virginia, we need Lou Ann Bennett standing up to Trump and Comstock, standing up for us.
I'm Lou Ann Bennett, and I approve this message.
And Ian, the latest ABC News Washington Post tracking poll, which as of Wednesday has the actual race deadlocked at 46%, Trump now leads Clinton on honesty and trustworthiness. The question is, who's more honest? 46% say Trump. 38% say Clinton. And obviously that's more trustworthy, not do you think this person is honest. Those numbers are way worse for both candidates. So, Ian, basically both parties are trying to get lower ballot people elected by attaching them like an anchor to their national presidential nominee. I don't think we've ever seen this both sides simultaneously to this extent.
No. Both sides have are well aware of how polarizing the opposite the opposite top of the ticket is, and they're right. That's why you've had such a depressing, grim, morbid, etc. Election season. What's additionally interesting is that now you even have parties, local, and I think there was a national ad, but I can't recall the details. Basically, looking for voters who will vote for Republican down ballot, even if they'll vote for Democratic top ballot. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of that, not much, certainly not to the same extent, but a little bit of that happening on the left as well. You know, it really is a dramatic shift that way. The honesty numbers are particularly interesting to me, though, in that here is Hillary Clinton, who I was, you know, just saying everyone knows has been dishonest for 30 years, and then Donald Trump, whose dishonesty is just so flagrant, so, you know, blatant and out there, and he'll say something, and then you can literally go and check the tape, and he said, you know, the very thing that he denies now, saying this is particularly helpful in a certain way in forecasting 4 years of a Clinton administration. You know, we already know that if Hillary is elected, you're going to have 4 years to look a lot like her 4 years in Foggy Bottom, or, you know, her whole political career of Clintonian circumlocutions and all of the rest. And the fact that she can't beat Trump in a trustworthiness matchup means that a Clinton administration is just going to enter under not only sort of the ethical cloud that we all expect, but just under a cloud of enormous distrust. Obviously, the two go hand in hand. But I don't think we've even yet appreciated just how distasteful she is and the way that she tries to shimmy out of her own ethical challenges. I don't think we've yet sort of appreciated how distasteful that is to most people. And it'll make for a very, very thorny 4 years for her.
So exciting heading into next Tuesday with this caliber of options on our presidential ballot. Ian, I can just feel the swelling pride within you of what the American voters have put in front of us this year.
Well, I was out with Evan McMullen out in Utah last week. So there is a very interesting race happening out there. And a candidate who, you know, is not a savior, obviously, but is also, I think, not a farce. So, you know, maybe Utah will save the nation. Who knows?
Well, with that optimistic outlook, Ian.
That's right. That's what I can do for you.
Always good to have you with us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Jim will be back on Thursday. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.